is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Good show coming up for you today. John Clayton will talk to us at 4 o'clock, as he does every day. Our buddy Paul Moyer, you know him, you love him. He'll be with us at 5 o'clock. And then Adam Kaplan will join us at 5:30, so a big football day and much to discuss. Adam is on a Sirius XM NFL radio, and he's the one that reported the Seahawks offered a deal to running back Devontae Freeman. So we'll get into that conversation with him at 5:30. Meanwhile, the video media scrums continue. They had a Zoom call today, the Seahawks did, with Quandre Diggs, and he talked about a few different things out there, and let you guys hear a bit of what he had to say if you haven't had a chance to hear it yet. Quandre Diggs talking about the quarantine being perfect for him because he just doesn't really like being around people.
Well, I work out at home. I got my Peloton, and then I have my nephews in town. I have my nephews in town for the past 3 weeks. So those guys been working with me, and then my trainer is usually only one more guy out there. So I keep it pretty low numbers. You know, I mean, I don't want to be around a bunch of people. I don't like being around a bunch of people anyway, but this has kind of been perfect for me. I can just, you know, be by myself and just hang out and chill with the fam.
I've got a couple buddies like that. I've got a good friend who's at home who says, this is perfect. I love this. He doesn't like being around people. He doesn't really like going out. He can do this standing on his head for another 6 months. And it sounds like Quandre Diggs is of a similar thought, doesn't love being around people.
Well, I like to think I'm one of those buddies, Bob, of yours, because I'm that way too. You know, for me, and we'll get to his comments last year. I think it caught us kind of by surprise when he said it, but we had him on the, I don't know if it was the huddle or our show, but you know, I always loved that I could go into the kingdom and, you know, put on a uniform and go out and be like a superhero for 3 hours and then just kind of like Clark Kent, go into the phone booth, put my regular clothes on, and walk out of there. And not a lot of people recognized me. So, you know, that was, you know, and a lot of people, if they did, they thought I was Paul Scanzi or Dave Craig. And I'm like, how big do you think receivers and quarterbacks are? Jeez. But, and Moyer, and I was sometimes, you know, mistaken for him, who we'll have on at 5 o'clock. But, it was perfect for me, and I think for basketball players and baseball players, you're out there, your face, everything, but you got a helmet on, and you can go out and do that. I feel like that's the kind of guy that he is, and I love that about him because you know that he really loves the football part of it. You know that old saying that some guys love being, you know, a football player, and other guys, you know, love playing football. And it sounds like he doesn't necessarily care about the recognition and things like that. He just wants to go out and play.
Yeah, I think he really enjoys being in Seattle because he was one of those players. Now, we're hearing from more and more players that don't mind Matt Patricia and, in fact, think that he's been good for their careers, his coaching style, being a little harder than some other coaches. But I think Diggs appreciates being here in Seattle, whether he would rather be by himself or around people or whatever, however that goes. I guess that doesn't matter as much as the fact that, I mean, this defense was completely, well, Bob, I know that you have some stats that say it wasn't completely different.
We'll get into those.
I have some that say that, no, the defense really was, so we can go back and forth on that. But, no, I think Diggs made a big difference with that defense once he got here in the five games that he played during the regular season anyway.
He was on with us last year, or when he first got here, and he talked about the weather. I think we asked him about the weather. Somebody did, and said it matches his personality.
Yeah, I'm fine with the gloomy. I got a gloomy personality, so that's fine with me. You know, some days I could be, you know, ready to laugh and joke, and then some days I just want to not talk to anybody. So that's kind of how I look at it here. It can be sunny, and then it could be gloomy.
So he's owning it, man. I don't like to be around people. I can be gloomy. I love it. He's in touch with who he is, and the weather here fits him. So this quarantine thing, not so tough for him in terms of being isolated from people.
Yeah. Well, and also, I remember the first time I coached high school football, we had a linebacker that was missing. And I was like, well, where is he? And they said, well, he's taking anger management classes. And I'm like, no. I want angry linebackers. You want that kind of guy. So, yeah, he's perfect mentality for the defense.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that, though, with him saying that he's a gloomy kind of guy? I don't get that impression from him. He just seemed laid back to me. And I thought it was funny. I try, you know, sometimes when we have players in there, I find myself laughing when things aren't funny. And with him, I mean, he was genuinely funny, and I enjoyed talking to him. And, yeah, it'll be fun to see what that Seahawks defense will be like with him with a full year.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he was trying to be funny with that, though. I think that he was very much about, yeah, sometimes I like to laugh. Other times I don't want to be around people. So he seems consistent anyway. But cut number three, we've talked about he was here for a very brief time last year, dealt with an injury, so couldn't get in right away. But developing a chemistry with the defensive backs, the other DBs in that room, is what he's talking about here.
I think it was really high. You know what I mean? I think going into that Carolina game, we all were clicking, and, you know, I got the high ankle sprain. But, you know, I think we all stick around each other. We all hang out during the week. I think we were really close. I think our chemistry will continue to get better each and every day, each and every week, because, you know, we all in group message. We all see each other in Zoom meetings, and we know we're just building. So, you know, I send B-Mac different things, and he sends me different things. And same with Shaq and the rest of the.
You know, and that's interesting. And Dave, you could probably speak to that. And I'm sure it's different for every player. But you get drafted by a team. You're sort of brought up by a team, so to speak. And then, boom, you're traded or you're a free agent, whatever. And you're in a new place, a new system, new terminology, new players in the room. How tough of an adjustment? How long did it take for you to feel comfortable in a new place? You were in Seattle. You're in Denver. How long is the transition like that?
It goes pretty quickly. You know, when you especially when you go through camp together. And which he didn't, but, you know, the guys now, they know each other so much better. I mean, even when I was in camp with guys, or, you know, I remember I've mentioned Chuck Cecil a few times and how we got to be friends in the off season. Well, Arizona, when he was with them, they came and practiced with us in up in Greeley in Denver, and, you know, they were there for a week, and I don't remember really like hanging out with them or going over and talking to them or anything. I mean, everybody's just so much more social now, you know, and a lot of it is because of the phone and Facebook and all that stuff. But yeah, it's interesting with him that he made friends pretty fast, and we found out when he got there. Remember, I mean, there was three or four of his teammates that were really pissed that they traded him. It was like they were mad at Matt Patricia. So he's a very popular guy. We knew that he knew Tyler Lockett, and they were like best friends, which when he got here, we're like, okay, well, if that's your best friend, then you're doing pretty well, because Tyler's a great guy. So, but the other thing we heard from him, and this is just, you know, trust, how much trust he was able to establish early on, like just the, you know, the, I guess, equity that he built up with the players. Because I remember talking to both Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin, and they both said specifically, I feel much better knowing that that Diggs is back there behind us. So this is a guy that he's special in that way. And that's the thing. I mean, if you see a guy that many people like him, it kind of reminds me of Steve Atwater. Like Steve Atwater, the reason why he's in the Hall of Fame is because he's a great player, but he was also a guy, Eugene Robinson, I would say that way too, that they just made you feel like $1 million. You know, they would, you know, talk about you in the paper, and they would say good things to you and point you out in meetings and look at this play and stuff like that. I mean, that's the kind of guy Quandre Diggs is, and you can tell that these younger guys, Shaquille and Trey, really like that. And, yeah, like I said, he's been able to establish a lot of credit with these guys, and a lot of equity in a very short period of time.
Well, and I think it's made a difference with Bradley McDougal, too. He talked about how he was more comfortable playing his position. And, you know, these guys aren't really ripping on Tedrick Thompson, who Diggs replaced, but they definitely went out of their way to say what a difference it is with Quandre Diggs out there. And a couple of more good things about, and we saw just in the five-game sample size last year how good he was back there. The Seahawks coming up with 16 takeaways in those five games. But, It's more than that. He's still just 27 years old. He just turned 27 in January. So you look at a guy that's in the – and he's got two more years left on his contract, and you're only paying him $5 million a year this year and $5.3 million next year. For a safety as good as he is, the back end of that defense. So the Seahawks are set up pretty well for the next couple of years anyway with him.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a full season of him could be a huge, huge benefit to what they're trying to do defensively. And we've talked about new guy in and how tough is it going to be. Just being a young guy, a rookie coming in is tough enough. And now you throw in the dynamic of a virtual offseason to this point. We don't know what it's going to look like as far as training camp, how much time they may actually have together on the field versus in front of a video screen. So he was asked about, How do you feel? How much time do you need to get ready for the season?
Me, honestly, I'm going to my 6th year. So if it was up to me, you know, I'd be cool with not doing training camp as much. You know what I mean? I'm cool with, you know, going out and practicing with my guys and being around my guys. But as far as getting in shape and, you know, things like that, I feel like you can do those things on your own. But when it's time to play football, you know what I mean? It's mentality. And, you know what I mean? It'd be cool if we had training camp. If we don't, you know, I wouldn't. Say it's a big deal, you know what I mean? I think guys will – we had the same offense, same defense, you know what I mean? We have a few new players, but, you know, I feel like we all got to get the grasp of the offense, the defense, special teams. And I think, you know what I mean, we can hit the ground running. I'm not saying we don't need to, you know, get together and practice and stuff like that, but, you know what I mean, preseason games, a lot of guys mixing matching anyways. So you're really going to, you know, get – you know, you might get 2 quarters playing in the preseason. That's it, so – I don't think it's that big of a deal.
So for veterans, obviously, much easier for them to adjust and figure out what's going on, especially if they've been here. He's up to speed on the terminology. It sounds like, and it sounds obvious, the biggest challenge is going to be either for the newer players that have been brought in from other locations or rookies.
Yeah. Well, it just you can't – there's no substitute for experience, and you know the fact that you got to get out on the field and fail. And I think a lot of about Cody Barton and some of the things that he did. He did some really good things last year, but some bad things too. And so those are the kinds of things you just kind of have to go through. So I think, you know, if you have a guy like this, he kind of reminds me of like Keith Butler for me when he would stand on the sidelines and tell me, you know, watch for this, watch for that. Those are the kinds of things you just don't think about when you're in college. So there's going to be some growing pains no matter what. But, you know, if you have guys like this that are that good of leaders and give, you know, some of the guys that have played a little bit that much confidence, it's they're going to be ahead of the game. I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of examples of guys that really made teams better, because you guys, I see in your notes here all the stats, and I have the same. It's funny, I have 3 notebooks here, and I'm like, oh man, where's my Diggs stats? And I pull up the third one that is open to the page where, and I think the 2,278th transaction. No, the 2,318th transaction was for Quandre Diggs last year, and since John Schneider has been here, and it's been one of the better moves. And I don't know if you guys remember, but man, at the time, you know, everybody was like, who's Quandre Diggs? You know, the only reason I remembered him is that Ed Dixon caught a touchdown over him in 2018 when we went out to Detroit and played them. So, but yeah, the guy, I mean, this is a great example of why does Schneider pick these guys? You know, why do they come up with, you know, a guy like Jordan Brooks? And this is a great example of a guy that they just knew, and Pete, probably a huge part of that, seeing that the way he plays defense and how it fits into his defense.
It's so funny to me, though, Dave, and I, you know, I guess I should be used to it by now. I don't know if I'll ever get used to it, though, this business of getting a player like Diggs, a starting safety, an above-average safety. You could even call him, well, he's not premier, but still an above-average safety in the league, and you got him for a 5th-round draft choice. And Dunbar, notwithstanding what happened down there with the dice game and whatever's going on there, I mean, you look at him for a 5th-round choice, who's going to upgrade you at right corner. So, yeah, I mean, this guy coming in here is really going to make a difference. And I don't know, though. You know, as far as the time that you need with these new players coming in, with the virtual meetings, the Zoom meetings and all that stuff, yeah, it's going to hurt a lot of guys. But everyone's in the same boat. So it's going to be difficult around the league. So it's not like the Seahawks are going to be behind other teams. I think they're all going to be swimming upstream, so to speak. And I like the idea of Pete Carroll being in charge in a situation like this because he embraces challenges. And this is one of the biggest challenges of his coaching career with the pandemic going on, to try and get his team up to speed as fast as he can.
Dave, a couple of people weighing in on the text. And you guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Busy Hard Seltzer text line, when you were talking about, you know, being a superhero on the field and then you could just be anonymous off the field. The 360 says, you look like Norman Bates. Who would approach you?
Well, that was my nickname my rookie year. So, yeah, I've had people tell, like, my wife, like, you know, I wondered why I didn't have a great game with the ladies and things like that. And she's like, well, you were kind of scary looking. So, yeah. But yeah, maybe, but you guys, I think Diggs kind of has that expression too.
Yeah, just sort of a pensive look, like, yeah, I'm not approachable. Don't do that. But I was looking through this last night and thinking about him when I saw that he was going to do the media session today. And we talk about him in a very bright way about how much difference he made on this defense. And I just started looking at the numbers last night. And this is more of a question. Is he really responsible for a massive turnaround? Because you look at this team over the season, they averaged 24, almost 25 points a game, allowing 24.9 points a game. He played in a total of 7 games, 5 in the regular season, 2 in the playoffs. The point totals they gave up in those games, 24, 9, 30, 28, 24, 9, both those 9 games were the Eagles, and then 28. And it's you look at, yeah, he had 3 picks on the year. He had a forced fumble. You know, you look at some of the big turnover games, he wasn't involved, you know, where you had Kyle Allen throwing 3 interceptions, by the way, a guy who threw 16 on the year in 13 games. So I'm just curious about his impact. Is he a guy, and maybe this is directed more at Dave, although I know, Jim, you want to defend it. It's more of a question. Is he a guy like Clowney where we see the impact? We see the attention he draws. We see what he does on the field, but it doesn't show up in the box score. It's not a stat you can record, yeah. But you look at him and go, man, that guy's incredibly effective and impactful, but you don't, when you look at the box score, it's not going to show up there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even harder to track than that Clowney. I mean, a lot of times you can see, if you just go watch a running play and he doesn't make a tackle, but you see him, you know, slip the guard and all of a sudden the running back's getting the ball and having to redirect in the backfield. I mean, that's pretty obvious. You can usually see the kind of disruption that he causes and allows other people to make plays. But with Diggs, I think a lot of his communication, and a lot of it is, you know, covering for another guy. You know, remember we used to talk about how Earl and Sherm and those guys, they would just look at each other and know, hey, we're going to switch here, or, you know, watch out for this or that. And he's that kind of communicator. So, yeah, I'm looking at, you know, and really, and I know you guys have these stats too, and I may be off, but I just had this scrawled down in my notes that he was – In the games that he was in, they got 16 of their 32 takeaways, and he was a right. big part of those. But the other thing too is, you know, I was looking at when he was with Detroit. So this last year, the games that he played in, the team was 7-2-1 because they had a tie there in Detroit, and then they won. I think they won 2 and lost 1, and then the regular season they won 4 and lost 1, and then they went 1-1 in the playoffs with Diggs. So. Yeah, it's just, I mean, you can't, there's 11 guys out on the field, and he would tell you, oh, that's crazy, I'm just doing my part, but still, there are certain players that are key that just make a defense go or make an offense go, and he appears to be one of those guys, and it's kind of one of those, you kind of have to take their word for it, but just from, you know, I always say, always listen to the players. What do they say about a guy? What are they saying about, you know, what he means to that defense? And we've heard a lot of praise right. for Quandre Diggs.
Yeah, I was just, Bob, looking at it with the turnovers or the takeaways. And his first game was the San Francisco game that they won down there in overtime. He had his first interception in that game. The Seahawks had three takeaways, so that was a win. Philadelphia the next week, another win, and there were five takeaways, two interceptions, three fumble recoveries. Minnesota, an interception, two fumbles. Trey had an interception in that game, so there's three, another win. Now, in the Rams game, they lost, the only loss in the five that he played. But he had two interceptions in that game. And then the Carolina game that you mentioned, three interceptions, two by KJ and one by Wagner. And so they came up with three takeaways there. So if you have 16 takeaways in five games versus 16 and 11, the next game he didn't play against San Francisco because he had an ankle injury and then came back for the playoffs. But I know you've got statistical information supporting that maybe they weren't as good as what people think with him out there, but I'd hate to see Tedrick Thompson coming back playing that position instead of Diggs this next year.
I'm not making the case for that at all, Jim. I'm not trying to make the case that they're better off with Lano Hill or Tedrick Thompson. I think he's a really good player. I really like Diggs on this roster. My point was just we do give him a ton of credit. Look at the turnaround. Look at the takeaways. I'm just curious. It was more of a question. Is he responsible in an indirect way for those turnovers? Because he personally, three interceptions, and I think he had a fumble recovery. That's four. How did he play into the rest of them? I think it's really hard to decipher, and that's why I reference Clowney, where, yeah, the stats aren't there, the sacks aren't there, but as Dave just said, when you talk to players, they're the ones that tell you, man, this guy is an extra meeting guy. He's a disruptor. It takes two people to slow him down. He has a definite impact that doesn't show up in the box score. Maybe we can get into this further. We're late. Let's take two right now.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife.
Take two.
Josh Gordon posted a video of himself catching passes in Seattle last night, and Mike Florio reported today that he intends to begin the process of applying for reinstatement from his NFL suspension.
I hope he comes back. I think he's a tremendous talent. As we talked about before, he's never been a bad teammate, a divisive locker room guy. The biggest victim of his behavior has been him. It's a sort of a self-destructive thing that obviously he's dealing with a disease on some level. So you root for that. You root for a turnaround, and hopefully he can find his way back.
I think in the Carolina game, he made the best catch I've ever seen in person. Caught the back half of a, 40, 50-yard pass. And you know, and I don't remember what the suspension was, but I know it was the last two games of the regular season and two games in the postseason, so that counts for four for any kind of a suspension that he would serve.
Well, and so many of his catches, he didn't have that many, but it seemed like every one of them was on third down and went for a first down. They were moving the chains after a Josh Gordon catch. But, Bob, do you want him back in Seattle?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm changing up the second story on you here, guys. NHL Seattle is causing some sparks of rumors that they might be announcing the name tonight with them tweeting out that GM Ron Francis is going on NHL Network. They wrote, "What's going on with NHL Seattle?" question mark, and then retweeted it from their account with a series of eyeball emojis.
They better give something to the fan base out here. This fan base is starving. Give them something. Don't tease. Don't go on there and come in with some fakakta. We're working on the building and we can't wait for the season to start and we'll unveil the name and the colors down the road. Don't do that to your fan base. You've got a rabid fan base ready to jump on board. Give them something to chew on.
All right, we got a new term for the show. Way to go, Bob. Love it. Yeah, let's go Kraken.
Bring out the Kraken, Dave. Let's go.
Release the Kraken.
All right. Fingers crossed it's going to be something we can discuss. Meanwhile, Mariners GM Jerry DePoto shared his thoughts on how he believes Major League Baseball players should look at a return to play. He did that with Danny and Gallant this morning. We'll let you hear what he had to say and give you our thoughts next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, Dave Wyman is going to give us the latest breakdown of some undrafted free agents, taking a look at some defensive ends the Seahawks have picked up. Maybe they can chip in on some of those sack totals we're expecting this season. So that is coming up in less than 15 minutes. You don't want to miss that. Quickly, before we get into our baseball conversation, let's bring in our producer, Maura Dooley. We already have an update on what the Seattle NHL club team is talking about.
Yeah, I guess it was he was going on, Ron Francis, the GM, was going on with NHL Network at 6 p.m. Eastern, so that was actually already happening. Brandon Gustafson, actually, if you talk to Dave, he calls him Son of a Gustafson, who writes for 710sports.com, posted an update basically saying that Francis said the organization is working on the process of getting the name decided and added that they want to be mindful of the current environment with the pandemic. Something that I've heard from NHL Seattle before, they think that people might be upset with them releasing the name in the middle of all this, but I think it's actually the opposite. People want a break from everything and want to be invested in this. But he also jokes that he wants it done ASAP so he can stop being asked the question.
So they gave us nothing.
Well, okay.
They went on there to make an announcement to say we've got nothing to tell you right now.
Hey, soon, hey,
no offense, but they were telling us that this was going to come out, you know, like last fall, then last spring, you know, then spring. I don't know what the delay is all about. I'm with you on that one, Maura. I think it'd be nice to hear what the name is. I mean, it'd be some good news, and they could get their merchandising going. I know they got get their ducks in a row and everything, but boy, let's get going with the Kraken. Come on, I'm getting impatient.
Well, we're supposed to have an NHL Seattle guest next week.
Okay, well then we can ask him, because I would think this is a prime time to announce a name. You've got a captive audience at home, a sports fan base just rabid for something new and fresh and current and live, and give them the name. Let them absorb the name. Let them debate. I love it. I hate it. I'll come to terms with it. Whatever. But it give your fan base something. So the idea that this is poor timing, I think, is completely backwards.
Well, what in the world could possibly be the complaint for releasing it now, that it's not sensitive to what's going on? What would be the reason? I don't understand.
There isn't
that
one.
Gripe. Well,
no idea.
I'm sure somebody might text it in. Text it in if you have any idea why that could possibly be insensitive or politically incorrect or whatever during this time. But yeah, it just seems like that it's a great time. I mean, everybody's looking for something, you know. And really, honestly, when we start talking about hockey, whenever we start talking about the most texts that we get by far is either team colors or the jerseys and what are they going to look like and what's going to be the name. It's not about, you know, getting the power play going or who's going to be the coach or, you know, what about this guy and that guy and what's going to be their offense. It's all about that. That's all people care about. So, yeah, I'm hoping we get something here soon.
All right. Well, we'll hopefully be speaking with somebody from the organization next week, and we'll have some clarity perhaps. But, yeah, that was a big tease there. Meanwhile, Mariners GM Jerry Dipoto, he was on with Danny and Gallant this morning and had some thoughts. We talked about Tom Glavine yesterday saying, listen, even if the players are 100% in the right here, they need to understand they are going to be the villains if this thing does not come together over money. If it's, you know, basically saying you got to suck it up for 1 year. It's 1 year. These are incredibly unique circumstances. It's 1 year. This is not how it's going to be moving forward in terms of pay. So we had those comments. Here's Jerry Dipoto's take on how the players should handle this.
My general thought is, you know, just go play. At the end of the day, we're very fortunate to do what we do. And, you know, whatever our job is in professional sports and in this moment in time, and I guess in any moment, my urge is, like, as we develop culture and as we develop character with our club, you know, we understand that there's a big world around you and there are a lot of people suffering. Don't whine. Just go play.
See, he had me up until don't whine, just go play. And I agree with what he's saying, and I think it's very reasoned, and I think it makes sense. But as soon as you throw the don't whine out there, he's going to get every player and everybody that supports the players over the owners on his back, which apparently is what's happening on Twitter.
Yeah, I guess I can see that now. Originally, I was with it, but it probably would have been better for him to not say that, right? You know, not yes. make it inflammatory there at the end. But, you know, we were talking kind of during the break, and so what if the owners, you know, so the players force the hand and say, you know, no, I'm not going to, and the owners go, okay, well, we're just not going to play at all. So, you know, are they expecting still to get paid for that? Because that's the same notion that is at hand right now, that they're expecting to get paid a full season for only playing half. So are they going to expect the full season for not paying, you know, playing any? That's the part I'm trying to figure out where my big question is as far as coming from the player's standpoint.
Yeah, I love what DePoto had to say there. Stop whining, start playing, however he said it exactly. I'm not going to give him a hard time, and I agree with you guys. If I'm a player and I hear this Seattle Mariners general manager telling me to stop whining and start playing, well, that's not going to make – I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, DePoto's right. Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of it like that. He's right. I got to stop whining, and I need to get my uniform on and get to the park. I don't think that's going to help. But, you know, far be it from me. I mean, I'm always saying things I wish I could have worded differently or not said at all. And, in fact, I've done that with
some DePoto, to Jerry DePoto.
Yeah, I know. So, but I love that. You know, if Jerry was here with me right now, I'd try and keep my 6 feet, but I'd want to give him a virtual hug because I feel much the same way. I mean, these guys just need, you know, whatever. I mean, if you're making $5 million, you're only going to make $2 million this year. Well, okay, you know, next year you'll be making five again, and then the next year after that you'll be making six or seven. I just have a really hard time with this, and anybody who's not on the owner's side and is siding with the players, just look at it in a short-term perspective. Special circumstances, pandemic, we've never dealt with this, greater good, all that philosophical stuff. That you know, about being good people. I don't know. Money's not everything. Throw out all the cliches. I mean, come on, guys. Let's go. Get out there on the field. I'm with Jerry on this one 100%.
Wow. Well, I don't think it'll make a difference in our relationship with him as it pertains to this show and you, but I'm sure he appreciates your support, Jim.
and thanks for your non-support there, Bob. That was really nice. I appreciate that.
No, I support it as well. I think he could have chosen some different words because I think it's going to disrupt the rest of what he was saying. People are going to focus on him saying don't whine, whereas everything that preceded that was on the mark. I think he's absolutely right. And then he threw that in there, and I think it'll distort the message. People aren't going to hear what he said prior to that, unfortunately.
Yeah, but you get so frustrated, and that's just being candid. That's how he feels, and that's I love that. You know, he's just at wit's end. He's at wit's end, and he's just saying, you know, this is ridiculous. I can't take it anymore. I know I'm on a radio show in Seattle, but screw it. I'm going to just say how I feel. I love that.
Yeah, and he might be in that position you are, where you're going, man, I wish I didn't word it that way, though.
Maybe he'll start to understand Jim more.
Now I get what Jim's talking about. I think I'm going to be more like
right.
Jim.
That's right. Well, this is a conversation that will continue. We've got some audio from Jeff Passan as well that maybe we can get to later on. We've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. It's Felix Hernandez's shutout of the Rays back in 2015. That one is brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. All right, Dave Wyman, he's got a permanent seat in front of a giant video monitor, just hitting that remote, rewind, pause, play, breaking down every Seahawks draft pick, every Seahawks rookie undrafted free agent. You guys are going to be a step ahead of everybody because you've been paying attention to his breakdowns of these players when they get on the field. And he's taking a look at a couple of defensive ends next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us to talk some football. You guys can text in throughout the show. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And I think we gotten one of our mean texts for the week, but you guys can text in your mean texts throughout the week, and we unveil those on Friday as long as you're creative. But this one taking a shot at you, Dave. It says, hey, Wyman, you in front of a monitor using video equipment to break down rookie play? Do you know what you're doing? I know it's way different than using film projectors and a white bed sheet taped to the wall. Good luck.
Yeah. Well, no, that wasn't me. He's right. Yeah, I've got like a film projector, you know, the 16 millimeter or 8 millimeter, whatever it was. You know, those things used to put you to sleep. I remember in Double Days, like just the, you'd be in a quiet room, like in between practices, and, you know, that chick thing going the whole time. It would be, you know, warm in there, and I just, you'd doze off every once in a while. But yeah, and then a chalkboard. That's all I need, man.
All right. Well, what did you, you took a look at a couple players last night. What do you got?
Well, the first guy I looked at, we're looking at defensive ends. So, you know, they got the two good guys in the draft, Alton Robinson and Daryl Taylor. So you're hoping to get something out of those guys. You brought in Mayoa and Irvin. And then, you know, you've got the guys that are more of like the five technique on the other side, like a defensive end are, you know, Collier and Rasheem Green. So there's a lot of question marks, man. I mean, it really is. Even if you look at a guy like Bruce Irvin, like, can he produce? And as you pointed out, Bob, 8.5 sacks last year was his career high. So you like to see, you know, those numbers, the trajectory. You know, he looks like a guy to me that is going to be not going to lose a step. So, but for these young guys, I'll tell you what, there's two of them here. First of all, this is maybe one of the first times where I've looked at a guy and gone, not been super positive, is looking at Marcus Webb. He's a kid out of Troy. And look, you know, I could be wrong about this, but, you know, I'm the things that you can get on him is he had a 35-inch vertical. He got 20 bench reps. I didn't see his 40 time. I think he's like a 4.75, 4.8 guy. But he's a hustler, man. And that's the thing about it. He's 6'2", 247 pounds. And his senior year, he had 27 tackles, 9 tackles for loss, 7 sacks, so and 12.5 sacks over his career there at Troy. He's a kid from Huntsville, Alabama. And, you know, when he was a senior in high school, he had 22 sacks his senior year. So, but, you know, I watched as much as I could on him. He was 5th in the Sun Belt Conference, which is where Troy plays, with 6 sacks. He had 3 sacks against Georgia Southern, and he was Sun Belt Player of the Week. But, you know, for him, all of the sacks that I saw was a play broke down. It wasn't like, you know, he's rushing the edge and, you know, got this great lean, you know, that we talked about with Daryl Taylor. The guy, he hustles his butt off, but he's kind of a tweener, you know, 6'2", 247. He just not a ton of production. But he hustles, and that's how he gets his sacks. So there wasn't anything like special there that jumped out to me when you look at him play. But you know he's been able to you know be productive in college anyway. So but I wanted to hurry up and get to the other guy because this guy is productive from a small school. His name's Eli Menser. And he went to Albany. And we talked the other day about Stony Brook. They're both in that Colonial. You know, conference where they're playing in the FCS, which is the, you know, Division I teams that go to a tournament at the end. So here he is, 6'1", 229 pounds. So he's not a big guy at all. He's listed at like a defensive end linebacker type. He's from Altoona, Pennsylvania, but his pro day he ran, you know, a 4.55. And then he ran on the slow end, was like a 4.7, so he's like a 4.65 guy, the 34-inch vertical. And his bench press reps were 18. But played in 14 games last year, and they went to the FCS playoff last year. They beat Central Connecticut State. They lost to Montana State. But this kid set an Albany football record with 14.5 sacks last year. So, and he led the FCS in forced fumbles. He had 5 forced fumbles, 24 tackles for loss. And so, and then, you know, he's kind of the FCS. He's kind of the Chase Young as far as numbers go. Cause I think Chase Young had 23 tackles for loss, but he has 3 forced fumbles and 2 fumble recoveries in a single game. One of them for a touchdown. And I watched that. It was against Central Michigan, which is a pretty good opponent. He's a guy that's strip first, sack later. And, you know, I'd say he's the Cliff Averill of strip sack guys because he's really good at it. And that's his intention when he gets in the backfield. He's trying to get the ball out. So, you know, in this game against Central Michigan, he goes, runs back there, strips him. You know, he's not trying to tackle him to the ground. His first move is to try to strip the guy of the ball. He gets it. It bounces, like, right up. He grabs it, turns around, and runs. And he's got decent speed, good field speed, and runs for a touchdown. He also had an interception in the playoff game, so he dropped back into coverage a little bit. But he was top 10 in sacks in the FCS. So he's hard to block. He makes all kinds of plays with, you know, different ways of, like, he tripped a guy, which I think is a penalty. But he was laying on the ground, and, you know, a running back was going past him, and he stuck his foot out and got away with it and tripped the guy. Another time he was on the ground, he grabs the guy's ankles and kind of flips him up in the air as he's, like, standing up. I mean, he's just really active and really fun to watch. His best move, though, is like this dip move that he kind of does a little. It's like a little shake, like takes a couple of steps, almost like a basketball player that's getting ready to do a crossover. And then he just dips his shoulder and his head down, you know, and does a really good job of getting around the edge. I just, you know, that's probably not going to work in the NFL as much as it worked for him at Albany. I guarantee you it's not. So, but, you know, he's going to have to get those kinds of things down, and maybe he can do that if he's able to get, like, a bull rush. And that's the thing I worry about, you know, for him at being 6'1", 229 pounds, that is, he's going to have to establish a bull rush first. But, you know, if he's able to get people up on their heels, then he might be able to get that done. But he hustles his ass off. Lots of his tackles are from the backside, just running it down. I saw one time there was a read option, so he stood in there for the quarterback to make sure he didn't have it, was kind of late getting out, and then just went straight down the line and hustled and went and tackled the running back for no gain. So love the way the guy plays. It may not work, like I said, that stuff in the NFL. So his pass rush moves may or may not work. It's something he's going to have to work on in the NFL. But the one thing about him, he's a big-time strip sack guy. I mean, the way that his focus on the ball and getting the ball away from the quarterback is really good. It's superior. So really like that part about him, and he's just one of those guys. You look for these guys. Remember when I looked at that Clemens kid, the safety out of SMU? And the reason why, you know, he was a possible free agent is just because of the production. I think he had 8 interceptions. Well, this kid just makes a ton of plays. Now, it is at a lesser level, you know, the FCS schools. You know, it's kind of like we talked about that Kyle Duggar kid out of Lenoir Rhine. I mean, this guy might be a little bit more of a, you know, project guy. But I could see him in the preseason, you know, having some good games. And, you know, kind of like Nick Reed that year, the kid from Oregon. You know, he came in here and had a really good preseason. He makes lots of plays, though. He's fun to watch. So he's going to be kind of a fun one. Underdog, definitely underdog at 6'1", 225, 229, whatever. And we'll see how they use him. But he's got a little knack of rushing the edge.
Good stuff. All right, a couple of defensive ends for you guys to keep an eye out for, Mensah and Webb. Maybe Webb not quite as much. Not as impressive to Dave Wyman, who does a great job breaking these players down for you each and every day. There were several rule proposals submitted to the NFL Competition Committee today, so what changes might we see this season? We'll ask the professor that question next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.